Hello and welcome again to the TCB podcast. We're at lucky number 7 as far as episodes. My name is Tim DeBlock, your host, aka Timmy. Joining me this evening are David Coleman, aka the Cyborg.
I'm still mad that Brad Arnsberg was fired.
And Sean Feist, aka Native Astro.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Love that bullpen.
I think you two hit the nail on the head with that one on our biggest stories of the week. You know, we didn't have the podcast last week because I was crying in my pillow due to Brad Arnsberg being let go. And then I was crying in my pillow this week because Brandon Lyon continued to give up home runs and ended up on the disabled list. So that's why we didn't have our podcast last week. But let's go ahead and get it started. We got a lot to talk about. Impressions about Brad Arnsberg being let go by the Astros.
Well, you know, I said I'm still mad about it, and I think that that's a little bit of an overstatement because it's not really mad. Like, I'm not angry at the Astros for doing it. I'm just kind of disappointed with the direction overall that the organization is taking, especially because now we can kind of see why he probably was arguing. It was probably mainly because of Brandon Lyon. That brought things to a head. You know, and do you really want to run an organization where somebody can't disagree with you and it gets so bad that you have to fire him because he's just trying to look out for the players? Yeah, it's just really discouraging, you know?
Yeah, I'd written a post about that because I was just frustrated that this didn't come to a head. I mean, for the last year, we've heard great things about Brad Arnsberg from top to bottom, how well he works with the pitchers. You know, just the amount of work he puts in, and then they have a disagreement for 2 or 3 weeks, and it just seems like egos were getting in the way, and they couldn't figure it out, and that was just very disappointing for the organization.
Yeah, I think part of it was ego, that's why they let Arnsberg go, but the more you read, it looks like that Arnsberg was more of a glorified scout, as some would describe, that he knew how to get batters out. He just didn't know how to maybe clean up the pitcher's mechanics or develop them, maybe. And maybe that's something that at the end of the day, the organization just felt, you know what, we're better off going in a separate direction.
Where did you read that?
I forgot where I read that, but it might have been like either Richard Justice or somebody from the Chronicle.
Oh, okay. Well, you might be on Wikipedia on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating because the reasons that they gave for Arnsberg, even if it is something like that, this isn't new information. They knew what they were getting in Brad Arnsberg when they hired him. This was the guy. He got in trouble every other stop because of this, because he liked the players, because he spoke up for players in this situation. And now all of a sudden you're going to go against the guy because he's been doing the same thing he's done his whole career. That bugs me more than anything because it looks like, for all intents and purposes, Doug Brocale is the company guy. You know, he's the guy that toes the line that Ed Wade and Tal Smith in the front office is put in there. He's not come up through the system. He's not Bird Hooten, who's got all this experience, you know, and has experience with younger guys and helping them out with their mechanics and things like that. He's just a guy that they like, and so they plugged into the spot.
Yeah, and this hadn't been going on for months or anything. This has been going on for weeks.
Yeah.
So it's you know, just very frustrating that they couldn't work it out. It could be, you know, Arnsberg's fault as well, that he just would not give in and he was, you know, sticking to his guns.
Well, and it may be that he's realized he didn't know what he was getting into with this franchise when he got into it. You know, he didn't know the front office. He didn't know the ownership situation. He just didn't know. And so after he'd been in it for a year and a half, he decided enough was enough and he was going to push it to a head.
Yeah, I think what drives me nuts with this more than anything is when things like this happen, the Astros fire whatever employee, they tend to hire people within the organization, ex-players mainly, as a glorified PR just a PR attempt to say better the situation. If it's, you know, hiring guys like Garner, Brocale, Cruz, even Jeff Bagwell, I just don't think they kind of tend to use these things as like a PR save more than making the best decision.
Well, and you mentioned Bagwell. If you think about how everyone was clamoring for him to stay around as the hitting coach last year, he didn't have any insight into hitters' mechanics and was able to correct that. Everything he brought was more intangible in getting guys to play to their fullest and accountability, blah, blah, blah. So you like that in Bagwell, but all of a sudden you don't like that Brad Arnsberg isn't more of a mechanics guy that can help fix things like that? It's just... It's like an organization that doesn't know what it wants, and that's frustrating because, you want to know that the people in charge of the favorite team that you follow every day know what the hell they're doing, and it doesn't seem like the Astros do right now.
Well, and to answer Sean I don't think this is anything the Astros specifically do. I think this is just baseball in particular. Look at the Florida Marlins, who brought back 80-year-old Jack McKeon to manage the Florida Marlins. And then you got Davey Johnson, who took over for the Washington Nationals, and he's been advising the Nationals GM Rizzo since 2009. So I don't think it's anything that surprising that the Astros brought in Doug Brocale.
Well, don't you think it's probably easier to step in as a manager over a club rather than a pitching coach? Because let's say, like, when you step in as a manager, you have guys that are, say as your pitching coach or your hitting coach that are already in place. But as if you're brought in as a pitching coach replacement or a hitting coach replacement, you basically have to get caught back up to speed on, your players that are in house.
Well, but he was a special assistant, so he didn't particularly deal with the major league team, but. He is kind of an idea of the organization.
That's why I think like Bert Hooten probably would have been a better fit, because if you look at the roster, half these guys have came up, through AAA. So there's a familiarity right there, and he knows what kind of guys he has.
Well, Bert's been up with the major league team before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it just seems like he was more of a minor league type of guy. Like he enjoyed working with the kids more than he did actually work with the major leaguers.
Yeah, definitely.
Of course, he's got a bunch of major leaguers at AAA right now anyway.
Well, and I read an interesting piece, or an interesting blurb, I should say. I think it was from Jason Stark's column or something like that, where some executive that, he got off the record to quote or something, said that the one position that nobody really is finding talent in is managerial candidates, young up-and-coming managerial candidates. And I think you kind of see that in this situation where the Astros are plugging in coaches. There's just not – we're kind of at a lull in talent on the managerial side of baseball, the coaching side of baseball. And, maybe that's because of a lot of different reasons, but – that could be what we're seeing, and I don't know. And it's certainly why Jack McKeon's got a job, even though he's 80 years old. But it's just, I'm still, 2 weeks later, I'm still frustrated by what happened, even though I've kind of accepted it and moved on. And, it's not like the pitching has gotten any better or any worse since Brad Arnsberg was fired. It's just the message that it gives off, I don't like.
Yeah, that day that he got let go, I was in shock, and
yeah.
I actually did not watch that game that night, just because I was so frustrated with the whole issue. For whatever reason, it's been a little bit tougher to watch games for the last 2 weeks since that occurred, and part of that has been the College World Series is going on, and my South Carolina Gamecocks are going back to the finals. So
yeah, I was glad to see that. If A&M's not going to be in it, at least South Carolina can try to win again.
Well, I saw David Coleman was playing in right field for the Virginia team Friday night.
So, well, like I say, everybody's got to have hobbies. So,
yeah, I thought that was pretty impressive by you.
Wow, look at those like, double duties.
Yeah, it looks like you can't lay down a bunt, though.
No.
Could this whole thing of, and this is going to kind of segue into Brandon Lyon, is do you think Arnsberg was fighting for Lyon to stay off the DL or go on the DL? If that, in fact, is the case for the frustration.
It's hard to say. I mean, it could just be a conflict of philosophy between like him and Brad Mills, which in the end maybe could put the hot seat back on Brad Mills now was a decision driven by him.
But wouldn't that have come up last year at some point?
You would think so.
I mean, this almost seems like it has to be some kind of event or something that would cause the rift between Arnsberg and the manager and the general manager.
It's hard to tell. I mean, it could be maybe Arnsberg thought that we were leaving our pitchers in there too long or going to the bullpen way too soon or vice versa. Who knows?
I think there probably was a wider scale philosophical difference between Arnsberg and Mills and just little things that kind of grated on him and made the work environment not work out in the long term. And so this was just came to it. But I definitely think that Brandon Lyon's situation brought this to a head. You know, kind of speculated it may be Jordan Lyles, his pitch count or whatever, and Arnsberg was trying to protect him. But I think with Lyon going on the DL, saying that he's out for the year, knowing that he probably wasn't fully recovered from his first stint on the DL, I think Arnsberg knew that, could see it in his pitching and what he was doing, and went and said, look, you got to put this guy on the DL. He's hurt. He shouldn't be out there. What are you trying to do?
So that falls back on Ed Wade and company, because I think so they know it, things are bad right now, and it doesn't look really good that we gave, you know, Lyon X amount of dollars. So in order to kind of salvage the situation, they just keep on throwing him out there and throwing him out there and throwing him out there, kind of a la Carlos Lee, and just in hopes that he rebounds. And it just, yeah, like you said, something's definitely wrong, either mechanical or now that we see, you know, it was a bicep tendonitis.
Well, I thought it was interesting, the timing too. You had Brandon Lyon still struggling. Was he on the DL at that time? I thought he was getting ready to come back.
No, I think he came back from the DL.
I think he was off then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, you also had Jordan Lyles. He was up at that point because he caught up at the end of May. So, you know, it could have been a number of different things.
Well, and like I said, I think knowing what Brad Arnsberg is, that players coach, and he's real close with his coaching staff or his pitching staff, you know, he goes to war for those guys. He's going to argue over his job to protect his pitchers. And that's a situation where I think one of his pitchers was getting in jeopardy because of what the Astros were doing to him. And I think he just, you know, told him, look, you can either fire me or put him on the DL. And they said, we're not putting him on the DL. So he said, okay, I'm gone. You know,
it's amazing how many coaches are doing that these days. Just
here's
my ultimatum, take it or leave it. You know, that Tony Regan thing was just, wow, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Tony Regan?
The Nationals manager? Did I get that?
John Riggleman.
Jim Riggleman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everything I heard is that he just wanted a conversation, which to me just says, hey, I just want to talk about it. And all Rizzo had to do was say, okay, what do you want to talk about? I want a contract extension. No. You know, and there's your conversation right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it doesn't look like Riggleman was going to be the manager of the Nats future. Mm-hmm. So, but that's for a Nationals podcast. That's not for an Astros. So with Brandon Lyon being out for the rest of the year, does that instantly make his signing a bust? Another Ed Wade failing? Does he join Kaz Matsui?
I would say yes. I mean, if you... Let's say that he's probably going to be out, what, at least a year?
Yeah, he'll be out for the rest of this year.
The contract ends, I believe.
End of next year.
Yeah, so.
And they're even talking that this might be career ending, or it's going to be difficult for him to come back from this.
It's an interesting injury. I mean, they're calling it that this might be the next, you know, Tommy John type injury.
Mm-hmm. Was it similar to the one that Jake Peavy had?
I think so. It's just the long head of the bicep tendon it's right by the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see how that's uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
and affect your, I guess, being able to pitch again.
Yeah, and you know, I think unfortunately the comparisons to Kaz Matsui are pretty apt. Because Matsui did have one good year with the Astros and then just didn't do anything. And I think that's what we got in Brandon Lyon right now.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, with Lyon started the year last year on the disabled list, he's done this year for the disabled list. I don't think we can count on him next year. I think he probably will pitch, but I don't think the Astros can make plans for him to be a big part of their bullpen next year for sure.
I think with his value, I mean, we argued for his value last year that he was right at where his contract was for that year, and that if he got into an actual closer's role, he might actually be able to make up for his contract. But I don't see that now. Even if he were to come back as the closer next year, I just don't think he makes up for his contract.
Not for that money. I mean, I think he's – like I said this before, I think he's serviceable as a closer. He's just not going to be an effective closer.
Yeah, and you know, this is I think that's one of the arguments that a lot of people made when he signed was I don't think they had a huge problem with the money. You know, $5 million a year is a lot of money for a reliever. It's not quite a lot of money for a closer necessarily. But 3 years betting on a player, an older player like Brandon Lyon, who's had some injury history, is just – it's really risky. And, you know, the Astros came up empty this year in the luck department with Lyon.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to reader email. We have another week of reader email from the same reader, Alan S. This is actually like a three-part question, so we're going to kick it off with Jose Altuve. Wanted to know y'all's thoughts on Altuve and how fast he can keep moving to get to Houston. My thinking is that he can continue to play at Corpus for the rest of this season and possibly skip AAA next year with a strong spring training and be our starting second baseman next year. I even think this might be the thoughts of the Astros because they are shopping Kep, who I think we can all agree is the most legit option for us at second base even next year unless he is gone.
I would have to agree with that. Altuve could be a guy that you wouldn't be shocked if one day, you know what, we trade Jeff Kepinger, and then let's just say for argument's sake that, you know, Downs gets moved wherever. We start seeing he becomes just that glorified platoon player, and they decide
third
that
base?
They want to, yeah.
Third base
would be logical, right? Yeah. I would have no problems with that. Let's just say, like for argument's sake, that you know what, they trade Kepinger and decide that they want to promote Altuve. I don't think you would see a lot of he could be a guy that could jump from Double A to the big leagues, just the way he hits.
You think he could or couldn't?
I think he could.
Okay.
I mean, we'll get a better look at him during the futures game.
Well, you know, and I think Altuve certainly could be, you know, they could be trying to line him up in the plans for next year to be at the big league second baseman. I think in order to do that, he would get called up to AAA at least for 10 or 15 games at the end of this year.
Right.
Because, you know, they always say that, you know, AAA experience isn't important, but they always like getting them at least a little bit of time at AAA just so that they can say that they were there before they come to the big leagues. And so if he's going to compete in spring training, I think we can gauge how much that's a realistic possibility by how much time he gets at AAA this year.
You guys think he gets a September call-up?
I wouldn't be shocked if he did.
Mm-hmm. Like I say, only if he's spent 10 to 15 games at Oklahoma City first and then would get the call-up after their season's over. I could see that. But I still think that's a little early for him.
Yeah, so what makes it interesting with Altuve is, have you noticed he's been seeing a lot of time at third?
Mm-hmm.
So what does that tell you right there that between Altuve and Paredes seeing a lot more time at third, is how much confidence have the Astros maybe lost in Chris Johnson? I know he's doing well this month, but I don't know. I just don't know if maybe he is their long-term solution at third.
Well, David, I think that – well, go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, I'm already in David's head on this one. I think they're just splitting time between the two positions because – I think both of them are second basemen naturally. So mm-hmm. trying to see you know, who can play third and how well and see which one's the best fit.
A lot of it too, yeah.
I think that has more to deal with it than Chris Johnson.
Yeah, because I think Johnson is a player that the front office was never really sold on to begin with. He had a strong, strong second half last year, and that kind of forced him into their conversation. And, you know, they gave him the opening day job, and he hasn't come through this year. So, of course, they're going to be looking for other options. I think probably Paredes is going to be a third baseman ultimately. just because I don't know that he's got quite the range to play second. And I think Altuve will probably stick at second base easily. Third base, I'm not sure how his arm is going to play. I haven't seen any of their games to know how he plays third base there. But, you know, like I've said before on this podcast, you talented guys, you find ways to get them in the lineup. And I think that they would do that with Altuve. They'll get him wherever they can on the infield just to get his bat in the lineup if it's that going to be that good.
I think to go back to how quickly I think Jose Altuve gets to the majors, I think he spends the rest of this year in Double A. And then next year he'll start out at Triple A. If he's tearing the cover off the ball, I think he'll get a non-Super 2 status call-up, which would mean end of May or early June is when they'd call him up.
And, you know, realistically, I think that's probably a better scenario. And I would even go so far as to say I think he spends an entire year at AAA before he gets called up. And then maybe gets called up the next year in between, you know, May or June after Super 2 status is over for that year. Because as much as we like his bat and as much as he's shown this year at a high-level pitching, I just think that there's going to be too many question marks by these traditional baseball guys that say his height's going to be a factor and we don't know how he's going to do in the majors.
Yeah, so a lot of that could maybe Tal Smith and this ownership group sees it one way, and maybe Jim Crane and his ownership group will see it a different way.
That's what I was just going to say, too. I mean, if we bring in Billy Bean after Ed Wade gets fired, he may be bringing up Altuve really quickly.
Yeah, that's...
Sorry, I'm looking at the statistics, the defensive statistics. I know they're not really worth much for minor leaguers, but looking at the ones for Parades and Altuve, and even in, Altuve's got less time at third base right now, but he looks like he's got the more range for what they're showing. He doesn't have an error yet, and Parades has 2 errors in 19 games so far over there. But I think that the determining factor on that one is he's 6'1", so I think he's more your prototypical third baseman. All right, well, let's move on to the next part of the email, which is which guys from this past draft can move the fastest to the majors, minus, of course, Springer.
Why does it have to be minus Springer?
Because everyone knows about Springer.
But what if he's the fastest to get to the majors?
Well, that's why we're taking minus Springer. Who else could you see getting to the majors?
It just depends.
I'm sorry you have to think.
Well, you know.
I know you're still reeling from the Brad Arnsberg firing, but we got to move on.
Well, does Jack Armstrong stick in the bullpen, or is he a starter?
So if Jack Armstrong is, let's just say that they put him, decide, you know what, he's going to be a closer. I could see him skyrocketing through the minors.
Yeah, that's what I'd say, too.
The better question is he going to sign or not sign?
There's a rub. How much money are they going to be able to offer him? That's a better question.
You know what, I think that just depends on how he does in the Cape League.
Yeah.
Maybe we should take that.
Yeah, they are waiting for that.
Maybe we should take a trip to the Cape League and just rattle them. I'd say another guy that maybe to watch out for is maybe Nicholas Trupiano, who was pretty impressive in his debut. I think he went 5 innings, maybe gave up an earned run, struck out 5, I think. That's probably a guy that you want to look out for. He is scary, similar to Dallas Keuchel. The way he's just going to be probably a workhorse.
Yeah. Well, and, kind of going, we could talk about everybody in the top 10, I think, in the draft and say that they could move quickly because they drafted a lot of polish there. But Brandon Meredith is another guy that's shown some things. You know, the batting average isn't too high so far in Tri-City, but he, is consistent with his pitches. He's getting on base, and he hit in college. Especially this year with the new bats. I don't think he hit for as much power. I think that was kind of the knock on him. But, he's a guy that if he proves that he's a hitter and proves that he can do it in the minors, that he could move up quickly there.
I'll go outside the top 10. I'll go with Matt Duffy. I'm just going to ride him.
He certainly looked good. I noticed Kevin Whitaker was playing him up with the 20th round thing the other day, and his Cat's Corner.
Yeah, he's got a he's off to a pretty good start right now. Of course, the concerning thing is he doesn't. He's in 37 plate appearances. He's only got 2 walks. Of course, he's also only got 4 strikeouts. So, you know.
Do I even need to talk about sample size when you just said 37 plate appearances?
Yeah, but two walks and 37 plate appearances. You'd like to see a little bit more, you know.
Well, you don't know what they're telling him. Maybe they're telling him to swing away. He's hitting the middle of the order. He's seeing fastballs. You know, your cleanup guy with men on base isn't going to necessarily take a walk every time.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see. Like I said, I'm riding him, so.
Yeah.
Another good story is Chase Davidson. I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with him.
Yeah.
He's been off to a really hot start, and that's, you know what? We're probably really lucky that we got him in the 41st round again, because I believe his career at Georgia was just nothing but injuries. I think he had lower back injuries that just kept him off the field for the better part of the year. I had a chance to see him on TV this year, and I saw him crank a ball to deep center over this mini green monster. It had to be at least, I don't know, I'd say about 420 feet. But that's – what's uh-oh?
Is he really named Chase or is he named Charles?
Chase Charles. It's funny. His full name is Charles Davidson.
Franklin Davidson.
I think he goes by Chase.
Yeah, I've always heard him as Chase.
Yeah, I didn't know if Baseball Reference had him screwed up or if, you know, he just went by Chase.
No.
Baseball Reference has him as Charles because I just looked for Chase Davidson. But
yeah, but they've had him as Julio Martinez instead of JD for a long time too, so.
What is that from Coming to America? His mama called him Clay. I'm going to call him Clay.
So we have anyone else, or is that pretty much it?
That's certainly a lot of names from this draft class that could be the fastest to move up. Ultimately, I'm going to stick with Jack Armstrong because I think he could be moved into that closer's role and be up by the end of next year if he signs and if he wants to be moved into that position. He's got that much raw talent with his fastball. And, you know, a closer needs 2 pitches, so he's already got 1 of them. If he can develop a decent breaking ball or slider or changeup or something, then, you know, he's the 8th inning guy for the Shark.
Did he pitch in the College World Series at all?
I kept trying to see him. I did not ever see him pitch, but I don't know. I think he did get into a game or two. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I did get a chance to see him.
Yeah, I was trying to catch him, but, you know, trying to catch a relief pitcher in a College World Series.
Yeah.
Not very easy. All right. So the third question is deals with the trade, which is a big topic on our website right now. If you have to make 2 trades, say because Crane says go for a trade, which one of the main 5 guys are you going to trade? Pence, Bourne, Myers, Wandy, Kepinger, and who are y'all's legit trade partners and possible guys in the system that you would want?
I actually thought about this a little bit earlier. So if I got to make just 2, I'm probably not going to trade Hunter Pence. I don't think Jim Crane will do it either. I think Ed Wade would probably have to get blown away with the trade offer. But if I had to just make 2, I would probably be more inclined to trade either Wandy Rodriguez or Michael Bourne, just for financial reasons.
See, I don't like that argument for Michael Bourne. Because Hunter Pence is going to cost you way more than Michael Bourne will.
Yeah, but
way more.
Yeah, but if you look at the dollar amount, I would say they're I don't know, it's probably apples and oranges, right?
Yeah.
Each player's has value, but it's just different kind of value.
Well, I've always said this, you know, I've been harping on this for the last couple weeks, is the Astros can sign Bourne even if they gotta pay him a little bit more than he's getting paid now. You know, heaven forbid you actually pay a player for playing good. They can get him for under market value.
I think with their concern is Scott Boras. For the most part, he generally takes his players to free agency. So I think that's probably what's scaring them a little bit. Even though, you know, like last year he signed he got cargo and extension in Colorado, but that was that rarely happens.
Right, but Scott Boras doesn't control the player. The player, if he wants to stay with the team, he's gonna pick that team. And just because Michael Bourne switched to Scott Boras doesn't mean he doesn't want to play for Houston. It means that he wants to get his money's worth.
True. Mm-hmm.
So, if Michael Bourne wants to stay in Houston, he'll stay in Houston. Now he might get sick of the losing in Houston and want to go play somewhere where he can, try to win a championship or something. But, can you really fault him for that?
Well, and I could see, a contract like 3 years at $8 million per year for Bourne. You kick in $1 million signing bonus, so it's, three for $25 million. I think that's a pretty reasonable deal. Bourne's got one more year of arbitration. You'd buy that out. And then you've got his first two free agent years that you're basically buying. He's not terribly old, so the degradation to his skills isn't going to be that great by the end of that contract. He's still going to be good defensively, so he's going to provide value there even if his bat isn't going. And I think that's a reasonable dollar amount for the Astros to pay for one of the best center fielders in the game.
Yeah.
So I guess my answer would be I'm not trading Bourne, and I'm not trading Pence. I'm certainly with you on that, Tim. And I think I would have to pick Kepinger and Wandy as the two most likely and the two that I would trade away, because I think you could get a pretty good return for Wandy. And I think Kep, he's not going to bring much, but he's going to bring a couple mid-level prospects that could turn out to something. And, he's not going to stay around. He's kind of helping the team out right now, but does this team really need the help? A couple more losses would help us next year in the draft standing more than anything. So,
yeah, I'm actually going with Brett Myers and Kepinger, just because I'd rather kind of trade off the old pieces versus some of the younger pieces. I know you can get more with the other three, but I think, like I said on the last podcast, if this team wants to be competitive, any chance of being competitive within the next couple of years, you want to kind of hang on to those valuable pieces, and it's just a matter of what you'd rather do. If some people just want to build up the farm system for continued success, I'd rather this team competing, in 2-3 years and still maintain, still trying to build that farm system up, because I don't know how many more losing seasons I can take.
Well, that's just the thing. Like, how many pieces should we really keep? If, with this current roster, there's still 23 games under 500, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how much value are we really, keeping?
And really, how much value difference is there for Wandy and Brett Myers? How much difference is there going to be tangibly over the next few years between those two pitchers? They're both similar ages, similar kind of erratic outings. And, Myers is obviously having a much worse season, but he's still turned in some pretty good starts lately. He's not been completely terrible. And Wandy, for every time that he looks like he's turned the corner and is going to be that dominant pitcher, he's not. He's not, he's maybe a number three starter on a playoff team. So is that going to really hurt us to trade him away and try to get a prospect who has, maybe takes a year or two longer to get to that point, but could be an all-star and impact player for a playoff team?
But I mean, he could also be a bust. A completely bust.
Sure. But that's the chance you take. Wandy could blow out his shoulder and never pitch again, and the Astros don't get any value out of him. I mean, it's just the risk you take trying to manage a baseball team.
Right. Well, but I mean, look at Roy Oswalt, and I know he's had back issues recently. I think a lot of us are, Brett Wallace has his own faults. I don't think he's going to be a perennial all-star. He should be in an average to above average major leaguer. J-Hap is, as we kind of predicted, has regressed. And so now are we hoping on Jimmy Paredes to come through this system and make up for the loss of Roy Oswalt?
Well, it's Jonathan Villar is who we got in that trade.
Oh, was it Jonathan? Yeah, that's the Lance Berkman trade. That's right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, same thing. I mean,
Sure.
Right now, obviously Roy Oswalt with his back issues kind of makes up for that a little bit, as sad as that is to see. But, you know, we're banking on Vilar right now because Brent Wallace doesn't look like the prospect we expected him to be. And, you know, J-Hap is what we expected he was going to be.
Mm-hmm. I just don't know if I'd be hesitant to give up on Brett Wallace just because of the pure fact of where they bat him in the lineup. He sees very little pitches. I mean, between being juggled around between the 5, the 6, the 7 hole.
Yeah, if we have time, we're definitely getting into that.
Yeah, maybe that's a topic for a discussion of next week. All right. Put him in the 3 hole.
Yeah.
But I mean, do you guys see any trading partners with the Astros for any of these players?
I know Troy Renicki had said earlier today that Wandy Rodriguez would be an ideal fit for the Colorado Rockies.
I don't see how not for the Rocky side. Maybe, you know, if the Rockies want to give up prospects for him, I'm sure the Astros will take it. But from my understanding, is Coors Field is not kind to curveballs, which is one.
I think his reasoning is, you know, they need a left-hand pitcher to replace, you know, Jorge De La Rosa that went down for the year.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably right. He's probably not an ideal pitcher for Coors Field.
Yeah, I think you're going to be flip-flopping his home road splits there. Mm-hmm. If that happens, he starts pitching better on the road than at home.
Hey, as an Astros fan, that's their problem.
Exactly. That's why I say I'll take the prospects if they want to give it up. But I think that'd just be a death sentence for Wandy Rodriguez, especially since he relies on that breaking ball so much.
Yeah, and it's a little bit similar to what Daryl Kyle experienced when he went up to Colorado, because he was the same kind of, you know, had that big sweeping curveball, and that just didn't break the same way in the Colorado air that it does down here at sea level. So he got rocked. But another team I was just looking – I certainly haven't looked at my prospect books for this yet. That's something I'll get into more in the next couple weeks when I try to put together trades or hear rumors and things like that. But an interesting trade partner for Kepinger is maybe the Cleveland Indians, who are, you know, struggling right now, need a second baseman. Right now they've got Orlando Cabrera playing quite a bit, and he is not hitting at all. They don't really have anybody on their bench. Shelley Duncan, you know, Adam Everett. These guys are the other guys they could move over there, and they certainly aren't doing anything great. I don't know what Cleveland's farm system looks like to know that if there's a match there, if there's a player that's got some intriguing upside but isn't, you know, necessarily a top 100 player that we could get for Kepinger. But I could certainly see them wanting to bring in Kep to kind of bolster their playoff run.
Well, I'm not much of a where are they going and who do I want. Do you guys have any prospects you'd like to see the Astros take?
You know, at this point, I think we're just better just add in like the French. I'd say guys that are at the AA level that with high upside. So that's why I kind of threw out the Rockies, because maybe someone like a Christian Frederick, it's not necessarily their best prospect as, you know, like a Tyler Matzik. They have depth, or maybe like a Tim Wheeler who's at AA, who's just raking. I think he's a 6'4 center fielder that I think he's batting .308, yeah. 18 home runs, 57 RBIs.
Tim didn't ask, who do you think we can get? He asked who you want. So the answer is Jesus Montero, Manny Banuelos, Zach Wheeler, you know, from the Giants. Oh, you know, these are the guys that we want. There's no way we're getting them, but it's the guys you want in trades.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to tell. I mean,
yeah.
It really depends on who's willing to overpay and who's going to deal from their strength.
Would you rather have pitching prospect or a third base prospect?
I think, well, I mean, pitching's always going to have currency, right? Especially for the Astros, depending if they move Myers, Wandy, whoever, they're going to need somebody to fill those holes because there's nothing at the AAA level. I mean, Keuchel is probably going to get moved to AAA later after the All-Star game, but I'm not really so sure that he's ready just yet.
You don't like Andy Van Hecken?
You know what? He's a good story because he's been in our system for a while. It's just I don't know how much of a difference he's going to make.
Yeah, and the problem with trading for position players over pitchers is that you're probably not going to get the quality position player that you would get the same quality pitcher just because of the bust factor. You know, there's a much more likely chance that the pitcher will bust out. And so a team is more willing to say, well, this guy's got talent, but we're just not sure. You know, there's something in his medical report that we're just a little uneasy on. So, yeah, give us your guy and we'll send you him plus somebody else, and that's fine. Whereas they're going to be less likely to do that with a comparable talented position player. You have to get a little bit lower down on the ceiling there. So pitching is always good. You always need lots of pitching, and you can always move guys into the bullpen. But I'd rather see position players, even if they're a little lower ceiling than the pitchers, just because the Astros need those position players. They've got guys that look like they could get to the major leagues and fill out some of these holes that the big league team has, but they're not there yet. You know, I want some more depth in the position player arena so that we can move those guys up and see, you know, where the chips fall.
All right. Well, let's move on to the face palm of the week. And I have to regrettably bring this one up. It's from Allison Footer, who I read moments before our recording of the podcast. She was, you guys know that Matt Downs is tearing the cover off the ball at this point, and the Astros are trying to find time for him. She said, this is it's like the baseball version of the chicken and the egg theory. Do you play Downs more, which will take away a hugely valuable weapon in the late innings, or do you keep him on the bench as your most valuable pinch hitter, eliminating the opportunity to give your hottest bat 3 or 4 plate appearances during a game? And this could just be trying to start conversation on our blog, but I think the answer is pretty obvious that you have to play Downs.
I mean, why would you sit Matt Downs just so you could have him in the seventh, eighth, or, you know, be able to pinch hit in the seventh, eighth inning? Isn't that the reason why we keep J Mike on the roster? Who's batting like a whopping, what, I think 211?
Did he get over the Mendoza line?
I don't think so. I'm being really nice. But no, that makes no sense. I mean, you got to get Matt Downs in there. I think I do. What's probably going to happen is, you know, Jeff Kepinger will probably get moved. Is it the right move? Probably not, but it's probably going to happen. And what you'll see is Matt Downs get moved into the second base position. That's how they're going to get him more playing time.
Jason Michaels, by the way, is hitting 205.
So that above the line. There you go.
Yeah, he is above the line.
Well, you know, there's an argument to be made that Matt Downs is valuable off the bench because the Astros are going to make a run at the wild card. So, you know, they need to be able to win those close games that they're going to need to get on that roll like they were in 2004 and 2005, right?
Right. But, I mean, and she goes on to say that you just never know with these bench players if they're going to pan out, which is true, but with the Astros, there's no reason not to see if he will pan out. Who knows? Maybe he goes on and, you know, proves to be an everyday regular player. And that's just one more position that the Astros don't have to worry about. I mean, I was looking at his statistics earlier today. You know, his BAP's right around 300 and he's hitting like crazy right now. So, you know, it's small sample size and everything, but you got to find out if he can be an everyday player. The only reason why he was on, why the Astros acquired him is because the Giants last year acquired Cody Ross, and they had mm-hmm. to take someone off their 40-man roster. And this is the World Series team, so, you know, they had to lose some depth to, you know, pick up Cody Ross, who went nuts in the playoffs. And that's why the Astros were able to grab him.
Yeah, and if you argue that you never know what's going to happen with a bench player, why is Jeff Kepinger playing? He was the same situation. He was a bench guy that should have never gotten the time that he did with the Astros in the first place. But he was a better hitter than Kaz Matsui, and so he got the time. You know, it really is a facepalm-worthy comment because it's just so ridiculous. Matt Downs, we need to see what Matt Downs can do. What's the worst that can happen? The Astros lose another game? Oh, my gosh, that's the worst thing in the world. It's going to kill this team to lose another game because Matt Downs did so poorly.
And he's providing exactly what the Astros needed. He's walking at a good clip. Mm-hmm. He's striking out a little more, but he's providing the power that this lineup lacks. He's got 6 home runs in, you know, less than 100 plate appearances. And I think that's like second on the team in a part-time role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's, I mean, like I talked about when I wrote the column on Matt Downs and the Chris Johnson question. Downs has showed just as much power potential in the minors as Chris Johnson. Mm-hmm. So you can't, if you're going to argue that Chris Johnson is the power guy on the Astros, you can't argue that Matt Downs can't provide that as well.
Right. I think, you know, and if anything's lacking from Downs, it might be defensively, where he actually might be a liability at third base. But that, you know, that just speaks to, if they're looking to move Kepinger, Downs can slide in right to second base. But even with his bad defense, I think he's an upgrade over Chris Johnson offensively.
Yeah, and his defense isn't quite as bad as Johnson's defense. So he would be an upgrade there, too.
You know, that still remains to be seen, because he hasn't gotten a whole lot of time at the major league level. But, you know, right, it's very possible that he could be better than Johnson. You know, he could be average.
But that's what you have to see. You got to put him in the lineup exactly, so that you can see what you've got.
Right. And I think that's one of the negatives about this organization, is that they don't. I mean, you can see they have a lack of patience with just about everyone. Even in bad times, even in losing seasons, they don't take the extra effort to go find out, you know, what they got with a player. Last year, Jared Tolles, they gave up on him after 50 plate appearances, and that has been the same. It took Jason Castro getting injured for Jared Tolles to stay on this roster. And you can see they can't even get rid of him now, even with him getting injured left and right.
Well, I think a lot of it, too, is it's the state of where the Astros organization is right now. Right now, they're scrambling. They're impatient. So that just has like a trickle effect of how they operate. You know, if it's bringing up Lyles too early, not getting a proper book of work on a player, making bad free agent acquisitions, you name it. It's just, I think a lot of it is the state of where this organization is at. And hopefully that'll change with Jim Crane.
Yeah, here's Matt Downs' line, by the way. It's .272 average, a .381 on base percentage, and .556 slugging, for a weighted on base average of .406. And that goes along with a .283 batting average on balls in play. So he's actually been rather unlucky on the balls he's put in play with that line. Obviously, I don't think he's that good, but you know. He's certainly an upgrade over Mr. Johnson, who's, I think he's at 300 and he's hitting .240.
Mm-hmm. But he's been hitting better lately, right?
Yeah. He's been hitting better in June.
Yeah. I read today he's hit like .295 in the last 39 games. So, yes, which is to be expected. I think he'll actually have a higher batting average on balls in play than average. He did that last year. And I think we kind of said that he'd have maybe a .320, .330 batting average on balls in play.
But where's his on-base percentage going to be, you know? Even if he's batting .296 over that stretch, where was the on-base percentage over that same period?
It's at 3% right now.
Yeah.
I think his K-to-walk rate's like atrocious right now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like 8-to-1 or something ridiculous.
Right. And you look at Matt Downs, he's walking at 12.4 right now. But, you know, typically in the minor leagues, he's been around between 8 and 11%. So that's certainly a lot more than Chris Johnson's going to be walking. So when he's struggling, at least he's still walking.
Yeah, you know, but the Astros don't like walks.
They're allergic to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah, that'd probably be the one knock on CJ is pitch recognition. Not many guys in the Astros roster do pitch recognition very well, outside of maybe Brett Wallace. Right. That was one of the things I liked about Jason Castro, is his pitch recognition.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. And you even look at J.R. Tolles. He's got like an 8% walk rate in his minor league career, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So. And if they could just keep him on the field, he's been been getting beat up in the behind the plate lately.
Yeah, I'm actually working on an article to find out if he's the unluckiest player in the major leagues.
He might be second to Humberto Quintero. Yeah. For some reason, Astro catchers just take a beating.
Right. Well, I mean, his .206 batting average on balls in play don't help either.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, surprisingly, there's a lot of guys who actually, there's five guys ahead of him as far as, or lower than him as far as batting average on balls in play. And it's no surprise. It's Maglio Ordóñez, or they're not names that you don't recognize. You know, these are names that you'll recognize. It's Maglio Ordóñez, Adam LaRoche, there's one other, and then Jose Lopez, who just got released.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, and then, you know, I was going to include the injuries because he can't stay in the lineup. I mean, they're playing Carlos Corcoran and now Brian Esposito's up. So, all right, well, let's move on to the minor leagues. We talked a little bit about Jose Altuve, and I'd actually like to talk about someone who's really hot on the boards right now or on the website right now in Cody Hens. You know, is he being blocked by James Van Ostrand and Kobe Clemens?
No.
No, you don't think so?
No.
He shouldn't be. I mean, James Van Ostrand, he's been in what, an organization for, I want to say this is what, his fourth or fifth year? Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he's still at AA.
Yeah, and I think the Astros like him because he's versatile. You know, he can play outfield and first base. And so he's got some value there, but I don't think he's going to block anybody from coming up, especially somebody that if they can hit. I just don't know what they think they have in Hensy. You know, I think that's the biggest issue. First baseman, it's all about the bat, right? And his bat's pretty good right now, but I don't know. I like him, and I think he will do well, but I don't think he's being blocked for sure.
Well, I mean, a lot of this could just be simply that maybe if they after they move Hensy to Double A, is they don't have anybody to plug in at Lancaster, because Telvin Ash till recently has been on the DL.
Well, why don't you bring up Tyler Burnett and have him play first in Lancaster,
yeah. Or Chase Davidson?
Yeah,
I don't know. That might be a little bit soon for Davidson, as much as I am a fan.
That's actually a good point, though, is that, you know, you got to look at people who can play first base once Hens leaves. But, I mean, can't you just really throw just about anyone in there? I mean, it's first base.
Well, you can't. That's one thing that J.D. Martinez proved, is that not everyone can play first base. I think the Astros would have loved if he could play first base, because that opened up a lot more possibilities. But he just can't because of his knees. It's actually easier for him to play in the outfield. So I do think that it's easier to find first baseman. And I think the Astros will, you know, they'll figure it out and they'll get somebody that can play there. You can go sign, you know, a Brian Dvorak or somebody like that can play first base in the minor leagues. But I just don't think that. I think it's more about Hensy's development, and that's why he's not moved up yet. I think that's what they're worried about. You know, they've got a timetable for this guy. They know what he's doing. They know how he's working off the field, and they're going to make that call regardless of the results.
Well, and I thought I read in the comments that Hens actually has better statistics on the road than he has at Lancaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the complete opposite of John Gasson, who just raked at home, but he couldn't hit on the road.
And that's something else someone else brought up, was that Kobe Clemens, you know, he had his big year at Lancaster. John Gaston, you know, now Cody Hens is going off. So I think what David's saying is probably they just don't know what they have with him yet. I mean, because he hadn't hit over 900 OPS in his three previous seasons, going back to 2008.
And there was some deal with him, some reason, like he got sick or something. The Astros were able to get him in some unusual way, and that kind of made him into, when he had his first big year with Lexington, that was, you know, kind of surprising that he was able to break out. And I can't for the life of me think of the story right now, but I know that there's some story about him and what made it, you know, a nice story that he was able to kind of finally start competing. But, you know, he's not a guy that's played very long. Even though he's older, he doesn't have the games, the plate appearances, things like that. And so, you know, we like to think that Lancaster is this ballpark that is just a offensive mecca, and it is for certain hitters. And if Ken Hensy is doing this and hitting home runs because he's able to pull the ball and get it up into that jet stream at Lancaster, that's going to affect how the Astros are evaluating him, because that's what John Gaston was able to do when he hit all those home runs. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. I certainly would like to see him get called up, but I'm not going to get angry that he's not, because I don't know the whole story, basically.
You guys think he gets called up at some point this year, or do you think he spends the entire year at Lancaster?
I wouldn't be disappointed if he got called up, or if he spent the whole year at Lancaster, but I think he certainly deserves it to at least try to hit at Corpus Christi.
Well, remember, he's 23 right now in Lancaster, mm-hmm. so, you know, he can't spend too many years, full seasons at the...
Well, he can. He's just wouldn't be much of a prospect at that point.
Right. But, you know, this newfound, let's challenge players or minor league players, you know, maybe that's it. Maybe they just don't think he can handle double A right now.
And, you know, the other thing is, here's a guy that, if he was having this season 3 years ago with the state the system was in, he'd be going crazy for him. He'd be the top prospect. We talk about him all the time. This would be an issue, when he's going to get called up. But right now, you know, he's a guy that is down on the list of prospects. He's intriguing, but the percentage of the chance that he pans out is fairly small, just because of the position he plays and how we don't really know how his bat's going to play at the upper levels of the minors.
Yeah, our top 30 prospects at the end of this year should be pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot tougher than it has been the last couple.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. All right, so we're running out of time here. Has Lexington become the most interesting – or not, I'm sorry, not Lexington, Corpus Christi. Has that become the most interesting level in the Astros minor league system?
I think for position players, yeah. I would say yes. I don't know how Dave feels.
Yeah, I would think so. I think there's still – well, and it – you know, it's all how you define interesting. I think there's the most productive hitters and the hitters that will be the quickest to make an impact at the major league level. But there's still some really interesting guys at Lexington. They're not really hitting right now, but especially with Ben Heath getting demoted back there. You've got him, you've got DDJ, you've got Mike Wasnicka. I mean, these guys, they're still interesting – because they're that next wave of people that are going to pan out. And I'm certainly still going to keep an eye on them. But I think overall, for how the major leagues are going to be affected, it's Corpus Christi hands down.
Are they interesting or just toolsy?
You know, when Jay Austin is patrolling center field at Minute Maid Park, you are going to eat your words, sir.
You mean playing second base?
Backup catcher, I thought it was.
Pitching? They're going to convert him to a pitcher.
Yeah?
Does he have an arm?
I don't know. I think
it's amazing how versatile Jay Austin has become on his podcast.
He's athletic. That's what you love about him. He's got those tools.
He's the Buster Posey of position player podcasts.
I think I'll just end up as a bat boy.
Yeah. Has anyone seen DDJ's numbers lately? He is really struggling. I think he's batting, I want to say, 188.
Yeah, I saw that they'd really tanked lately.
Yeah.
That's not good.
You know, I'd be interested to see if the Astros demote him.
Yeah, well, I think they'll probably do the same thing they did with Giovanni Meyer and just let him spend this whole year getting his, you know, head beat in by the pitchers at in the Sally, and next year send him back there and see what he does. And, you know, if he does well half a season, they'll promote him to Lancaster.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, that's going to be it for this show. Any listener comments or questions, you can email the show at thecrawfishboxes@gmail.com. As you can see, we do answer reader email. So send them in, even if it is to let us know that we suck. Do you guys have any last words?
Not this week.
Any complaints, just send them to Tim.
Are we demoralized by the way the Astros are playing this last couple of weeks?
Oh, man.
Can it get any lower?
They scored 10 runs today. Let's look at the positive, guys.
And we still lost.
You're looking at the wrong set of lines. We scored 10 runs. That's great.
It is. I mean, if you're going to take something away from this team lately,
That just means they used up all their runs for this this upcoming week.
Hey, that's scary.
All right. Well, thank you, and see you next time on the TCB podcast.
See ya.